Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Rodney Smith, sitting in a little bit for the man usually behind the microphone, Mr. Lee Vaughn. Sister Rossi will be joining us momentarily to get on with another episode of Real Radio, or Radio Established to Address Life. We do have a guest coming on a little bit later this morning to share some words on PR and some other areas, but there's a whole lot of news out there. And, you know, this is one of those times where even if you were trying to ignore the news, as I have been trying to ignore some of it, just not able to get away from it all. So we're going to touch on some of that. Sister Rossi, how are you this morning?
Good morning, good morning. And no, you don't stop watching news. That is the good thing about us being in this time. Instead of us waiting for news around the world to come on a ship and go all the way around the Cape of Good Hope, we get it now. We get it right now so that we can behave right now. Don't run from the news. Just make sure that you diversify your news, Brother Rodney. Don't just let them give you your news. Make sure that you seek out things like newsletters from independent organizations. You know, it's a lot of information that happens on those that the news media deem worthy or unworthy. So you might not hear about it until they decide. There's a lot of news in scientific studies being done. They try to wait on some publisher or editor to pull information out of the study so that it sounds usable to the general public, but the information all goes back to somebody's scientific data that they have compiled. The news is there for you, especially the feel-good news. It happens in the church newsletters, how sister such and such has finally got a place for her and the babies. It happens in those newsletters that come from organizations that the government pays to address crisis issues in the area. They will send you some news that will warm your heart about children being fed, old people being getting the medical attention that they need and deserve. It's just, we just getting that, the Associated Press's version. And so it depresses us. But there's good news, just like there's good trouble. Right, Brother Rodney?
Well, there's definitely good trouble, and looks like we're going to have to make a whole lot of good trouble with all of these new voting restrictions by multiple states. This is not just voter suppression. This is straight up Jim Crow. As a matter of fact, this might even be Jim Crow's big brother that's being enacted in multiple states, Texas, I believe, being the next one up. Actually, I think it's going to backfire on them in the end, but it's the fact that these people are actually passing laws to restrict the freedom to vote. That is an amazing fact, considering that this country is supposed to be about freedom and the country where the people select their representatives is also full of a major political party trying to restrict opportunities to vote. What do you think about some of these voting restriction laws? And, oh, by the way, it's not that I'm not watching news. There's some news that I don't want to watch. I don't want to hear about. And I must admit, the Derek Chauvin trial is one of those pieces of news that I don't really want to read, nor do I want to watch.
I must say that, well, I'm not consuming it the way, say, we did the OJ trial, right? We ate that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I will say that I'm interested in any case against the state because it sets a precedent for us to be able to have some kind of stronghold against creating new policy. If we don't have a your policy is killing us type foundation, then we can't, in my opinion, create a really strong push urge for policy change. So while I am not looking, I don't care about how much dope Floyd did, I am paying close attention to the science of getting the state. The science of holding the state accountable for how it treats its citizens. I'm interested in that because if we can get that down, then we can do things like get rid of the chokehold permanently. And if you chokehold a person for any, you know, if you're out here chokeholding, you go to jail, period. So, but they have legal, you know, found a reason for the chokehold with police behavior, police protocol. And so, yeah, it's hard to punish Eric Gardner's killer because we have not established a criminal chokehold precedent. But now, I do believe this kind of law, how we are looking at this law now, we're going to be able to get young lawyers to push for bills and legislation that prohibits a person from putting all of their any person, including the law, from putting all or half of their body weight on a person's neck, face, chest, abdomen, like that. Like if you have to use your knee, I guess the only place you can knee them is on their knee, you know, and that way you can know that you're not killing them. But anywhere where respiration happens that has the full weight of an adult male, the half or the full weight of an adult male's compression on it, it's going to have issues, whether it's, you know, premeditated drug use or asthma. It really doesn't matter. So the science of the nature, Brother Rodney, is what I would hope everybody is paying attention to, not even the tears and the sorrow, because it's too late for that. Next, I want to delve into somebody's finally paying for the murder of Freddie Gray. To have someone be dead and there be no murderer, it's impossible. It's impossible to kill without there being a killer. And so what happened was there was a young boy who turned up dead with no killer. These instances are what we are trying to work against right now. And reductionists to make this a kill-to-kill thing. Oh, y'all just like to draw it out and see what happened. No. And this is a litigious society we live in. We love our law. We use it to get ill money that we should have from things like wrongful death suits. We use it to get money we shouldn't have, the legal system. And so to not want to use these cases like the Rodney King case, like in some instances, even what they did to Fred Hampton, the idea of the state not being your 100% protector, showing examples of this, showing examples of how the tactics and protocols they have that allow them not to work on your behalf, that allow them to kill, you know, state-sanctioned kill you, these are the things we need to attack, not personality. Nobody gives a shit about whether or not Derek Chauvin was a good or a bad person. We are interested as a society that wants to progress in whether or not that kneel procedure should be allowed in any officer's handbook of behavior from now until integrity in the United States, federally. Not just in that state. I'm talking about federally. So that's going to take some time. It takes, us compiling data on these cases. And I watch because when you get ready to get outraged, it's not, you get ready, oh, this is bad, this is fucked up. And they're like, well, why? And you can't verbalize it because he's dead. Because he killed him. And you like, and they like, well, he had to. And you like, no, he it has to be another way. Well, there has to be a way for us to argue that, Brother Rodney, without hysterics, without the loss of life, without, there has to be a way for us to get this ideology across in the hearts and minds of Americans. And I think we're going to do it by compiling case data. And unfortunately, that means there will be more. And sometimes we're going to have to go retroactively. And the books have been cooked now. They don't always say what they did to kill. If you don't have 41 bullets in you like they did with Diallo, Amadou Diallo, if you don't have 41 bullets, they can say, he shot back or something, anything. They can say anything when they come in on you, engage you in your house like they did Breonna Taylor. They can say whatever. So now we need to address the state because he's calling it the police. That's even the police is only one finger of the hand that's gripping. We need to address how the state allows the police to deal with us. I guess is the best way I could explain it.
So, Sister Rossi, is it about laws, though, because there are laws on the books already against murder, against assault? It's not so much that I'm against a new law if it makes things better. But, and you said compile evidence. There's evidence that's been compiled since at least 1619. in this country on white people killing black people. Matter of fact, even in we have a constitution, and we're still making laws on trying to get white people to stop harming other people. We now need to do something for Asians. We have to do something for the Latinx community.
We've always had to do something for man-to-man. Man-to-man violence is going to be what it is, Rodney. I'm talking about when we are interacting with the state. The violence that a new police recruit, fresh with no stripes or nothing on his badge or nothing, I mean on his shoulder, when he gets the right to behave, in you know, according to a rule book that they taught him at the police academy. That's what I want to address. That book that is the state is handing down to agents who say they're going to do better than the average hillbilly white man ever will attest to doing. I don't talk to people, the people of the people. When we hurt each other, it's just going to be what it is. But those of us who say, I am here to kill the chaos, I am here to help when chaos has come, I am here to protect and serve, those are those state agents that get that pay by the government and our taxes and whatnot. Those people, I want them to have a better book to work by so that, one, we can start weeding the wheat from the chaff and get some of them bad cops that's making it hard for us to even trust the institution at all. At all.
Well, again, I would say that the institution is the problem, because the problem is in white America. And so each institution predominantly employs white people, mostly white men, and they're killing us in general society. And so then when they get a badge or some other form of authority, whatever it may be, at whatever level of the state it may be, that new microcosm of society, whether it be the police force, whether it be the judges that give inordinate sentences, there's still white people that came from white society that has something against black people that then use the authority of whatever office that they're in to enact these heinous crimes against not just black people, but primarily black people, but pretty much everyone who has not received their white card and occasionally build over to them, because once you get used to killing, hey, if they can kill one, I can kill another.
That's true. It's almost as though if I want to be able to behave with impunity, I can just, hide my true nature or show my true nature, some would say. But I am a part of the protect and serve community in that I used to be a paramedic. I used to have a service responder's, ID and call, badge and oath. And so once you say, okay, if somebody starts choking, instead of just pulling out my phone, I'm going to help. You join a different, whether you want to or not, you join a different realm of our society. You're not a part of the just let me do my own thing crew. You're part of the let me fix what's best for the community, for all of us if I can, crew. And if you're going to join that crew, it's particularly vicious to come being not with that agenda that's clearly in the books, but with this hidden agenda of sanctioned murder, hiding of evidence, stealing of dope money and stealing of resources, neglecting children. Then we're not even going to talk about some of their personal households and what and the damage they do to the ones they actually love just from taking on this horrific task of serving and protecting the community, you know, to the best of their ability. I would like to address that.
Well, it's my understanding that there were two police officers with the murderer of Mr. George Floyd who basically didn't do anything to stop this from happening. As a matter of fact, they were standing around watching like everybody else and helping. Also, my understanding also is that there was a paramedic, as you speak about the helpers, there was a paramedic who was off duty, who lived in the neighborhood, who was out and walked by and even offered to help Mr. Floyd. And I believe their response was, don't come any closer. If you do, I will, is it mace or pepper spray you? So there was someone who is currently doing what you used to do, who obviously has the attitude that you had and have, but the authority of the badge and the gun prevented her from helping, just like it prevented the few people, several people, we'll go more than few, several people. It wasn't a crowd, as they portrayed. There were several people, and they prevented them from helping. So, again, the cravenness of the actions of white police officers in general, but of these craven individuals, the laws don't seem to make a difference to them. There's no death penalty, even if it was a counterfeit 20, which I don't even know if it's been proven that it was or proven that he got it nefariously, but he got the death penalty for that. And millions of people have become traumatized by watching a little white man, but he had a gun, kill a good-sized brother in front of millions of people, because I think it was being streamed live, if I'm not mistaken. And then we get to hear about it played out day in and day out. If we were looking at purposely traumatizing a group of people by playing it day in and day out, that would be a textbook example of how to traumatize people. So that's why I choose not to watch it. I know what happened. I saw the video. There's no need for me to see anything else. It is not about the laws, but it is about the minds of the individuals that carry out these acts and allow these acts to happen. And if we don't do something with the minds of the individuals who do these things, then just like they've been happening since 1619, just like with Emmett Till, and the list goes on, the list will continue. Like the beat, the list goes on.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, brother. So what can we do? We can make sure that we report cops. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but they are reportable. It may not seem like anything gets done because it's a somewhat closed society, but there is always someone who will report, you know, help let you give you the paper that lets you report a cop. And what you need to do is, once you fill out your report and you get it, you know, time stamped by somebody, you take a picture and you send it to somebody else, you get it verified with audience, or you get it verified with somebody who can see. And after enough of those of us following through, we will begin to, you know, decrease the number of And I call them vigilante agents. I don't call them policemen or cops, because I believe that there's a fundamental helping core to the cause of being a policeman. Those, I do believe in the idea of a bad cop, not just a complete bad system. Now, most people would argue with me, like, it's in the books. The reason why they're not bad cops is because the behavior they engaged in is condoned by the protocol that they sign up for. And that's where I want us to begin to address it. First, by reporting the individuals who use that bad protocol and using those reports and the consequences that come out of it to hold these individual police departments accountable. But it ain't much we can do, Brother Rodney, until we can get all these police departments Fergusoned. You know what I mean by that? When they did what they did to Mike Brown, the FBI came in and did a crime audit of the city of Ferguson. When they were able to show that the cops was only stopping black people, like they were stopping black people 70-30 or something. It was really bad, so very bad that, you know, it showed that what a negative engagement they were having with the state as far as police was concerned. And I believe that we need a commission. We need a, because that's how big it's going to get. Whenever you get ready to do a study on a national level, I do believe they call it a commission. We need a federal crime commission on definitely every major city in the United States, and quite possibly every city in the United States.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Sister Rasha, because Las Vegas had just that brought about by the local NAACP office, and the feds came in and came up with over 100, and I believe it was 103 findings. That was what they had to fix. The other interesting thing about that, at the same time that was happening, is that the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is considered the model police department of the nation. But it had 103 findings by the feds when the NAACP got them to come in, and then they did sort of that audit that you're talking about. So, again, it is about the people. It is about the mindset of the people. And until we change the mindset of white people, until those mindsets get changed, I believe that we will continue to get more of what we have, because in their mind, it is not wrong. In their mind, it is we, because of our existence, that is wrong. Someone said, Rodney, well, how would you stop it? And I says, well, you got to stop teaching white supremacy. I said, but if you have a flood in your house, what's the first thing you do? You turn off the water. So if we want to get rid of white supremacy, which is what these killings is all about, it is white supremacy, then you got to stop teaching it. So you cut it off at the source. That's a big push in society today. But until you do that, there could be plenty of laws. Remember, Trayvon Martin was said to have beat George Zimmerman with a weapon. What was the weapon? The sidewalk. So he was attacked. He defended himself, was getting the better of the individual. The individual shoots him. And then they say that the individual was justified in doing it because a deadly weapon was being used against him, called a sidewalk, like we walk around carrying the sidewalk. That's a depraved state of mind. And until we do something about those depraved states of mind, you know, I've lost track of the people that have been killed by police since Trayvon Martin, since Sandra Bland. Heck, I've even lost track with some of the more latest because there's so many. If we don't change the mind of the people, then they will continue to do the things that they've been doing since before 1619. Brother Lee.
How do you plan on changing? Good morning. I've been listening to you all's conversations. I'm trying to make some donuts out here today. How do you change the mind of the people, though, that don't see you as a citizen and or as a human? I shared the breaking news out of Virginia where the lieutenant was pepper sprayed in his brand new vehicle by a police officer. They alleged that the traffic stop was about tags not being displayed on the truck. The truck was new. He just bought it. He had a temporary tag that was displayed in the rear of the window. If you look at the body cam footage, you see that. So that was BS. So what was really the issue? You know, I'm thinking about it as I'm driving in today, and I'm thinking, you know, we all know who police are. A good number of them, not all of them, I don't even want to say most of them, but a good number of them are people who chose that profession because they felt lesser than. A good number of them are folks who chose that profession because they couldn't make it into the military. So here you are, this young man in the military whom is riding in a pretty nice truck, maybe one that they themselves could not afford. Did they take that anger and angst out on him? Or was it just a case of them being disgruntled that evening? I don't know. I really don't know. I have no freaking clue. And it's sad that we're even put in a state where we have to guess. But here we are again, someone else, again, being disrespected, wearing the uniform. The uniform doesn't protect you. The first thing they see is that you're black. Your education doesn't protect you. The first thing they see is you're black. This young man was a lieutenant in the United States Army. That doesn't happen without a degree. That doesn't protect you. He was an officer in the United States Army. His uniform does not protect him. What was the issue? Was that really necessary? Was that level of angst and anger and the threat of force really that necessary? He didn't try to pull off. There was nothing going on. Nothing. You know, I'm sorry, Ronnie. Go ahead.
No, I thought you was done, brother. I apologize for interrupting you. Going back to your question, history comes to play here.
Right.
We know that the main targets of Red Summer were black military people coming back from World War One. Yep. The war to end all wars that could not have been won had it not been for black people being in it. And when they came back home, they were immediately targeted by white people, white men predominantly, beat in uniform, burned, tarred and feathered. As a matter of fact, when I hear people today say, they used to say this about Colin Kaepernick, now they don't say that about Kaepernick anymore, but they would say, well, so many people wore this uniform to protect this flag, blah, blah, blah. And then I think, yeah, there was a whole bunch of black people who wore this uniform, who protected this flag, and while they were still in that uniform, after coming back and doing just that, were beaten and lynched, and in the process of being beaten and lynched, were ridiculed for wearing the uniform. So it has nothing to do with the uniform, the occupation, the education level. That is not it. You hit the nail on the head. It is simply that the dominant group white people are depraved, have been depraved ever since they've been in this country. We need to call it what it is. And they have the majority of the power. They have the majority of the money. The majority of white people run government, as the majority of white people run the private business sector. And it is something in them that is against us, not the other way around. The way you change it is, I do not believe that we can change people en masse who are already steeped in white supremacy. I do not believe that. What I said earlier is, I said, if you have a flood in your house, you have to turn off the source of the water. And in America, the source of the water that creates the flood that we have control over is our education system. And so every year we graduate a new class of white supremacists. Remember, those people in Charlottesville were wearing khakis and carrying tiki torches, and these were young white men, roughly in their 30s. So to say that it's just a bunch of old white people that's dying out, yeah, white people are dying, but we got a new group, a new crop every year. And as long as we're getting that new crop, it continues. So you have to cut it off. You have to cut it off at the source. Then the ones that you have left, you have to isolate them, just like isolating a virus, because white people are the virus of the planet. You have to isolate those that still have those attitudes until they die. And once they die and we stop creating new ones, that's how you change.
There's a better way. Okay, there is a better way, in my opinion, than isolating humans. And because they have to behave. These people who we don't like, these supremacists, these people who have created a policy and principles to exclude others economically, medically, educationally, they have to do it according to some kind of they do it in a certain way, like. They teach you, like you said, they teach you faulty history in your history class. They give you no black people of significance in math ever, from kindergarten all the way up to your thesis class in advanced engineering. No black people. So it's subtle how they do that. So if we find out how that behavior is being enacted, and begin to pick that apart, not try to convince them to do anything, but take away the ways in which they can do that fucked up shit they do. We have to have a crew that looks at how doctors prescribe pain. You know, if it's not right, if they can notice a trend, then they do something about that. They put doctors in teams. So with different ethnicities or different genders or something, so that you don't get a single-minded diagnosis. There are ways, okay, not forcing them to change, but snatching away the ways in which they keep this status quo system enacted to where they won't have no, they'll self-segregate. Because they won't have a way of controlling the general public with their personal ideology.
Sister Rossi, you talked about creating commissions, national commissions. I know it's a little bit possibly before your time, but President Lyndon Baines Johnson, LBJ, created the Kerner Commission. And it was right after the riots in, what was that, 66? It was right after the riots.
Yes, Brother Ron. It's before my physical time, but I have seen the actual commission.
Okay. And in that report, 67, in that report, it was written, and for those who haven't read it, I strongly encourage you to read it, because we don't need another report. A report was already done. And matter of fact, and there's been some done since then, it's not that we do not know what the problems are. because the dominant people, again, white people, will not allow the necessary steps to take place to get rid of the problem. LBJ, the President of the United States, don't get much more national than that, established the commission, came up with the findings, and the findings that it came up with are the same things that we're dealing with today. You can go and substitute the report, take the date off of it, and say it was done yesterday, and it would be just as apropos today as it was back then. So it's not like we don't know what it is.
Well, when he put that together, he needed people like our guests of today. And I finally got it together, and I apologize to our guests because I've been messing up. But we're going to be joined today by Carlos Scott. And that's, Carlos and I go a ways back. We've known one another for a while. He's a veteran marketing PR executive at Envision Marketing Incorporated. He has over two decades of representing 8 Olympic gold medalists, 5 Super Bowl champs, multi-platinum Grammy-winning artists, and Hollywood actors, to name a few. He also specializes in media crisis management and consults Fortune 500 companies, politicians, and not-for-profits. Mr. Scott has been featured on CNN, CNBC, BNC, ESPN, Sports Business Journal, and other international media outlets to provide expert insight. He is a proud single father raising his 15-year-old son with autism in Atlanta. What up, nephew? You can follow him on Instagram at Carlos Scott. And this is my man, 50 Grand, without a doubt. I had to change his name up a little bit because he said his mama would get upset if we called him by his nickname. But we just call him C-Lo. What's up, C?
What's going on, my brother? What's going on?
I'm good, fam. The question is, what's going on down there in Georgia, man? You know, I really wanted to reach out to you as a Democratic strategist to get your input on what's happening on the ground down there. These folks have gone crazy. I mean, Trump then bought like 50 lawsuits against, I think, every state in the nation, and none of them went anywhere. But these folks keep insisting that the election was rigged and we need more stringent policies in order to conduct our next election. What the problem is?
Well, what they did was they created a solution for a problem that didn't exist. And so and that is voter fraud. His people, there's a commission that they put together, and they actually said this was the safest election in American history. Do you understand? Let me repeat. The safest election in American history. That same guy who made that comment, Mr. Krebs, was fired immediately after saying that. But in all seriousness, let's get to the heart of the matter, and that is the Republicans are now trying to switch up the apparatus, like my grandfather used to say. Sometimes, you know, these folks, the powers that be, I guess as your previous caller was saying, these white folks, I'll just say the powers that be, they have what we call a ever-moving goalpost. They'll say the bar is 10 feet. Once we master shooting that thing at 10 feet, all of a sudden now it's, well, it's got to be 11 feet. Well, once we start, you know, 11 feet, then it's, well, you got to, and so, what happened is, let me give you some historical information about mailer, this whole thing with mail-in votes. Do you know who pretty much created and started this whole thing with mail-in votes? The Republicans about 20 years ago. They were kicking our behinds all across the place, and you know how they were doing it? Mail-in votes. So it wasn't until several years ago, when Stacey Abrams lost at the behest and because of then Secretary of State, who was running for governor, which was a conflict of interest, Brian Kemp, he purged something like, I want to say it's like 500,000 people from the voter polls, unbeknownst to themselves.
Yep.
How many of them people do you think look like you and I? Right.
I would say 98%.
What, And so at the end of the day, when you're up against a system where the person playing, it's like we old enough to remember, you and I, Lee, we're approaching 50 in a couple of years, and we're old enough to remember playing at our neighbor's house and playing basketball. And all of a sudden, when we start whooping his behind, what's the first thing he want to do? He want to take his ball and go in the house, right? So that's exactly what, the Republicans are doing now. Now that we're kicking their butt and then turn states like Georgia to Democrat, all of a sudden now they want to change the apparatus and take the ball and go home. And so what we have to do, and I can say there are already several lawsuits that are that have been filed. We got some of the baddest litigators, you know, in America that are on this. You know, as you stated earlier, Donald Trump and the Republicans have filed close to 60 lawsuits. All of them have been pretty much thrown out with the exception of one. And the one that wasn't thrown out, it wasn't as heinous as all of the other ones, but it still went nowhere because there was nothing gained from the success or from that lawsuit not being dismissed, if you get what I'm saying. So what we have to do is I want to piggyback, and I don't know if you guys have talked about this on the show or not, but, you know, here in Atlanta, Major League Baseball did something that nobody suspected they would do, and that is they pulled an All-Star game from Georgia because of Brian Kemp's new legislation that he signed with the voter suppression. And so they didn't waste any time, and they went ahead and they made the decision that they were going to pull the All-Star game because they want to support voters' rights for all people, okay? That sounds great, and I applaud them on it. You know, I represent MLB players as well, and so I have a great relationship with Major League Baseball executives. I've met, the current, commissioner, several times and whatever, but the reality is this. They actually, I'm not giving them too much credit, Lee, because by them deciding to pull the All-Star game, it's not like this is their first time doing this or sports league doing this. Remember, a couple of years ago, the NBA pulled the All-Star game out of Charlotte because of some controversial LGBT law that was passed related to, like, bathrooms, remember? And then they moved it to New Orleans.
Well, it was New Orleans. I thought it was Houston. Okay, whatever. I got you. I remember that year.
Well, what happened is the reason that they did that is because the LGBT community has such a loud voice and economic power. Because that's how you hit people. At the end of the day, you can march all you want to, but if you ain't hitting these people in the pocket, nothing venture, nothing gain. So Major League Baseball, they saw the Twitter traffic, they saw the interviews on the heat that people were saying that if Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, and some of these other major sponsors and corporations, especially based here in Georgia, didn't get behind it, that they were going to boycott. Who do you think sponsors Major League Baseball? Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, or whatever. So what happens is Major League Baseball, and they'll never publicly say this, and I don't blame them. Major League Baseball, by them deciding to move the All-Star game from Georgia, they basically saved themselves as well as their sponsors from having to go through an economic boycott being charged by Black Lives Matter or by Stacey Abrams or by any other major organization, NAACP, you name it. So they don't get – I applaud them on one end for having the kahunas to do it, but on the other end, I know what this thing is, and they did this. This was more about saving themselves than it was about them touting civil rights. because the Sixers is the same organization that doesn't have any ownership, okay?
They also have arbitration coming up pretty soon. They also have arbitration coming up pretty soon. And they're trying to skip out on that, you know, becoming an issue. They were trying to front it like they didn't want the players having to have to answer the question or feel the pressure of, are you going to play? Are you going to play? Why did you play? Why did you not play? Blah, blah, blah. No, you got arbitration coming up soon, and you did not want to piss none of these young cats off. Because I'm telling you something, these young kids are leading the way. You know what I'm saying? A lot of these older cats are more concerned with the commas and the zeros, and these young kids understand they're going to earn those commas and zeros no matter what. They can earn those commas and zeros through TikTok, through YouTube, so on and so forth. So, you know, these older cats who don't know about that or stuck in their ways where they focus solely on their contract, that, you know, they're not seeing it. So I definitely get that. And, no, I'm not giving them huge kudos either because, you know, I agree with you, Los. Like, they have no black ownership whatsoever. I think a sister bought a piece.
I'm sorry, I have a question.
Go ahead, Rasha.
I was listening to your credentials, Brother Scott. Are you the male Olivia Pope?
basically, I'm the. I jokingly say that I'm the black male heterosexual version of Olivia Pope.
And I was going to say, next you're going to tell me you and Michelle Obama got a pen pal thing going on, right?
Well, I've been to the Obama. it's not a secret. We have one of my best friends actually of probably over 23 years is Hill Harper, and Hill actually went to Harvard with them. So I got an opportunity to go to Oprah Winfrey's house, and I promise this ain't a humble brag. I'm just telling the story. Back when he was running for president, and when I came from there, that fundraiser, I knew right then and there that he had it because it was like a rainbow push coalition, in the words of the late great Fred, Fred Hampton, that it was Asian, white, Hispanic, you name it, at Oprah's house. I'm gonna be honest, I didn't believe he had a snowball chance in hell, but when I saw that in person, I was like, oh wait a minute, he's got some. He's got a serious shot. And as we know, he went on ahead to make history twice. And, you know, it is what it is.
So you know how to tell a room full of dead bodies, a pile of cocaine, and a pile of cash, and make that seem different somehow to somebody.
It's called get the hell out of there.
The person who controls the spin, the narrative, as they say, the person who can control the narrative, they control the facts, they control the reality of the matter. And so one would argue that when you represent these people, you're controlling their best narrative and probably doing quite a bit of back underground, you know, scuffling control for when the narrative is not so good, like when you didn't punch your wife in an elevator, or you know, or when you didn't
always messing with that boy.
But here's the deal, Lee. I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, the sisters, we've actually had to deal with some international crisis because of the level of our clients. We've had to deal with some international crises before, and we've successfully navigated through them. Let me tell you, I know what it's like to have 38 missed calls from TMZ in 15 minutes. I know what it's like to be waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning by an interpreter, by a French reporter with an interpreter on it, and whatever, trying to get a quote. It's, when you're dealing with that type of, like at an international level, it's a whole other apparatus that goes into trying to make that thing right. And so, you know.
All right, so now I need your tips now. I need your tips. Uh-huh. Tell me. One thing they say is don't write it down. Like if you can remember it, just don't type it in and don't write it down. Uh-huh. Do you agree, Mr. Scott?
That's a kind of vague statement in reference to what? In reference,
well,
to,
like if you're going to be a person with a representative like you, Mr. Scott, you out there, well, and you got good things happening, and you got your own little personal life happening. Do your best not to write anything discriminating possibly down.
Oh yeah. Here's the deal. I gave one better than that. We specialize in trying to be proactive and not reactive. And my advice is, don't put yourself in a situation where I got to be called at 2 o'clock in the morning because of a police block. You know. So these are the type of things. You know, unfortunately, we just lost an icon in hip hop and just in music culture. And DMX.
Yes, I was going to tell you, about that.
Master P was interviewed, ironically, by TMZ, and he said, you know, and he said something. Some people might take offense to it, whatever, but he's telling the truth. He said, this, you know, this could have been avoided. Like, we have to put systems in place and support for our people that are hurting and that need help. And at the end of the day, a lot of these industries, they help you to make this money and whatever, but at the same time, when you go through whatever you're going through, it's like, okay, well, you're on your own. And so as much money as the hundreds of millions of dollars that the industry has made off of DMX's music, and there was no life preserver that was thrown to him to help him deal with his addictions and things of that nature. And other matters that he faced. And so, you know, but hey, it is what it is. Rest in peace, my brother. His ex-wife is actually a former client and still a friend. And so my heart goes out to them and all of his children, which is a lot. And, you know, it's just,
you know, you broached that subject, and, you know, I was going to save it till after you left, but here's my thing. You know, I remember an article not too long ago. D actually befriended a white guy in Arizona. And the guy was saying how different of a person he was off stage than on. But, you know, many of us understand, and we get it. You know what I'm saying? But, no, I don't think anyone could have led him differently, to be honest with you. I don't know the brother, but from his actions, from all the chances and opportunities that he did have, you know, I think his demons were just too deep. Whatever his demons were, I just really think they were too deep. And he coped with them the best way he could. And I love him for that. I love DMX for being who he was. And unfortunately, there was this shot.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, Lee. And what I mean when I say help, like, for example, sometimes, and I'm not trying to place blame on anybody. I don't want nobody, you're like, oh, he's blaming. But what happens is a lot of these people need help from the inside. And it's like sometimes they end up having, whether it's family members, homeboys, girlfriend, wife, you know, whatever, and
right,
they don't get that support internally as well as professionally. And that's kind of the angle. It wasn't even just only, it's like I wanted Def Jam to be the only one involved with trying to help DMX, but it's like all hands on, but at the end of the day, you hit the nail on the head, Lee. You know, with anybody, with any of us, once we decide to do whatever it is we're going to do, ain't a damn thing nobody can do to stop us from doing that particular thing.
But let's be honest, too. You know, Russell is a motherfucker. Like, Russell's mindset and his business mantra is well documented. You know what I'm saying? For Russell not to go visit Slick Rick. For Russell not to go visit Slick Rick. Only time that he ever went to see Slick Rick was because of the documentary. To me, that's gutter. But Russell says straight up, that's not my life. And I tell all these cats from the giddy up, you either about the music or you about the streets. You can't be about both. And if you about the streets and you go to jail, don't look for me. You know what I'm saying? Because that's not my life. But Russell was more than happy to make millions upon millions of dollars off these kids. You know what I'm saying? But he was not going to support them if they got in any kind of trouble. And, you know, Slick Rick's situation was unique and different. You know what I'm saying? I believe Rick has been rehabilitated. I believe he's done his time the way he was supposed to. And ever since he's been out, he's been nothing more than a model citizen. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, Rick was young. Rick was explosive. Rick was – he had that imagery of being the man. So those things, you know, much like the league, and I'm talking about any league, the NBA, MLB, NFL,
right. All
these cats, man, they put lump sums of money in front of these kids' hands. It's like, yo, here you go. And for some of these cats who never, ever, 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 ever saw anything remotely close to anything beyond a $100 bill, that's like, whoa. And they are going to go off a cliff no matter how much support you try to give them. I congratulate the NFL. I'm not totally familiar with every program they have, but they do highlight it during the draft, which is coming up at the end of the month. Not a shout-out to them, but I'm excited about seeing the damn draft, so I wanted to speak on it. It's coming up at the end of the month about the programs they have for the rookies and the financial classes, so on and so forth.
Yeah, you know, I've actually participated. It's called the rookie Symposium, and I'm gonna tell it like it is type of person. So I'm not gonna. The NFL has of all of the leagues has the worst track record as far as their former athletes being broke. That almost 80% of former or retired NFL players end up either bankrupt or outright broke. And so, and a lot of it has to do with the politics. I wanted to bring in Ted Turner's financial guy to do something with the league several years ago, almost 10 years ago.
Mm.
And do you know that they shot it down? And the reason that they shot it down pretty much was, is he a member or whatever, you know, basically had he paid us our $2,500 to be registered with us? And so I'm thinking to myself, like, are you shitting
right,
me?
I got you.
This is Ted,
right, I got you.
Ted Turner's financial guy, and he wants to, and here's the deal. He wasn't even going to charge them to even come do it. He just, you know, because he and I were, you know, sitting at the time I had a player that was playing for the Hawks, and I would always be sitting courtside, and he sat next to me, and so one of the VPs of the Hawks introduced us and to me, him and his wife, and, you know, he invited me to his condo one day, and we had a talk, and he was like, what's going on with what's the kid's name? He's not a kid. Antoine Walker. Antoine Walker had ran into some serious trouble with his finances, remember? And he got locked up for trying to pass, bad checks or whatever in Vegas. Vegas, they don't play that game about no money in Vegas. And so that started a conversation. And so he was like, you know, what is it? And I just told him, I said, look, to piggyback on what you said, Lee, I said a lot of these kids are coming from very, very severe adverse below poor situation.
Right.
So financial literacy, Tracy McGrady said it best. When he got his first check, I think it was like $500,000, $750,000, he didn't have a bank account to go cash in it. There have been NFL players at the check cashing place trying to cash their advance. Do you hear me?
That is the funniest thing Chappelle skit I've ever heard of in my life. Don't start that.
Yeah, I kid you not.
I was.
Yeah, but you know, but nonetheless. But back to the voting thing, man. Like I said, we gonna fight like hell down here in Georgia. We're not giving up.
Well,
we're gonna put up a fight.
Mr. Scott, would you agree that they get you kind of in a catch-22? The argument is we don't want to have people on a voting list that don't belong. You'll agree there, right?
Well, here's the deal. Here's the whole thing about that. I was I'm trying to keep from laughing because the analogy is just hilarious. How many people do you know That's like me going down to the child support office and volunteering to pay Lee's child support. Okay, you know, I mean, how many? I mean, that just doesn't happen. I mean, at the end of the day, when you start talking about voting, and they talk about this ID, the voter ID. They have a voter ID. It's called your driver's license or whatever ID that you have. So you're trying to create a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. You know what I mean? And so they,
this is what one of the other arguments was. All right, this is what they hit us with. I'm just telling you what they're telling us, all right? Because they want us to believe that there's dead people voting. They want us to believe that some of the people who are voting more than one or two times in different precincts and districts. And that they're pretending to be people who they're not because they don't have proper identification, right? We don't want none of that. Nobody wants any of that to actually happen. So in order to get that to go down, they have to have these quote-unquote laws. So when you say the laws are bogus, it's almost like you are saying, yeah, I don't care if a dead man votes.
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the probability, for example, right, there's a lot of Latinos in Georgia, Texas, and stuff that vote, and the reality is these people can't vote unless they're legal in some shape, form, or fashion. That's just not how that works. They have to have a legal presence in order to vote. Okay, so as a matter of fact, most of the people who are in that status of being and I hate to say this, but undocumented legal, trust me, they're not coming nowhere near a voting poll. because a lot of those people that are trying to remain anonymous and not whatever, they're not trying to come to no voting poll and then cast an illegal ballot. You see what I'm saying? So that they're trying to fix a like I said, a problem that doesn't exist.
Right.
You know, and that's
the last
thing
they said is there's something about the absentee, Mr. Scott. They said if you ain't here to be actually a member of the society, a member of the area, and have those laws that we are voting for and against enacted upon you, should you have the right to vote, should you have the right to vote on stuff that ain't going to have no effect on you, you ain't here. If you're not here, then why should you be able to say who is and is not in charge?
Well, that's
you're talking about the absentee vote, you say?
Right.
You're talking about Lee, like, for example, Lee and I served the country over in England, okay? So are you trying to say that because we're serving the country, willing to die, that we shouldn't have a vote? It's called absentee voting. You see what I'm saying? So I think they have they're trying to make a problem exist that doesn't exist. Absentee voting has been around for crying out loud. I beg to differ. Maybe 80. I mean, it's been a long time. We've had wars take place, and we still had the election that went on. Okay, I mean, in the middle of a war, and so I think it. Now, granted, I want to give credence to. You're 100% right, my sister. That everybody that legally. It should be voting, should vote, and we should not have anybody voting that should not vote. My answer or my question or basically my statement to that is, the good thing about that, people, that 99% of the people that are voting are of legal vote, because the people that aren't supposed to be voting, for whatever their status is, they're not trying to enter no government agency. And they're not trying to go look into no government agency or building or whatever and cast a vote in the fear of ICE taking us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's not like, I mean, you got some places in Texas, for crying out loud, that
were actually threatening to call ICE on Latino people on the same
whether they were real, documented or undocumented. So
but see, that's the threat.
Our
argument is we're gaining ground.
The prisoners are some prisoners are released as convicts are able to vote now. People who they used to think were diminished capacity, they're pushing and pulling on diminished capacity votes, and just getting people to the polling station is changing. And I want to thank you because just being a politician in Georgia right now, it's like being a de facto celebrity. Watching a state flip is amazing because it almost takes people from other communities moving into these neighborhoods and changing how that neighborhood reflects, or building so many people on the other side, say the Democratic side, to combat the Republicanness of Georgia, that it was truly like watching a battle again, like an old-timey Civil War, a battle between those who want something for tomorrow and those who only think about yesterday, who are still stuck somehow in yesterday. I want to thank you, Mr. Scott, for your work for tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a great point, my sister. And here's the deal. You are 100% right that nobody who does not deserve to vote should not be voting, whether it's absentee, whether it's in person or whatever. And the good thing about it is that we have it's not a perfect system, but it's damn near pretty close to it when you look at what the infrastructure that they put and the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that they put working on that thing. And it wasn't even just something that they worked on in like the last 6 months. They spent years. A friend of mine actually here in the state of Georgia was a part of. He worked on the voter securities kind of commission or whatever. And it's pretty sophisticated. And you know, yeah, I just think, like I said, they're really trying to create a solution to a problem that does not exist. You know, I used to pay child support before I had custody of my son. I never got a letter in the mail that Lee Vaughn had paid a month of child support.
Right.
Oh, yeah, Lee paid this month. You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, I hooked you up, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, look. Exactly. Rodney, do you have any more questions for our guest?
I don't know so much about a question, but I think that when we start talking about the stuff that goes on with the voter registration, because really that's what it's about is voter registration, is that voting
right
in this country is supposed to be a right. And I'm not understanding signing up or registering for your right. So in other words, when a person turns 18, it should be plugged into the system that you are automatically registered to vote. If you go to jail and lose your voting rights, until we can fix that too, then when you're fully released, your voting rights should automatically be restored. So, again, when you talk about Oh, go ahead, brother.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry. My phone was delayed. Go ahead.
No, I guess what I'm trying to say is that is a problem or a solution to a problem that we should not have, because there shouldn't be opportunities for people like Kemp and others to go and purge the voting rolls because you didn't vote last election. It's your right to vote or not to vote. So those type of onerous laws, that's voter suppression already. So these other things that they're doing now is reenacting more Jim Crow laws. And what I've always said is what we allow to happen to one, eventually it will happen to others. And so what we've allowed to happen to black people is happening to Asians. It's happened to Latinx, but it's also happening to white people now. So this is something that white people have created to protect themselves against black people, but what maybe they haven't gotten a memo. Just like after the Civil War, when we got our first black senators, we got our first black House of Representative people, black people are interested in that right of self-governance too. And I'm very thankful for people like yourself as well as Stacey Abrams. And I would say once we defeat these onerous laws that we have, we take it a step further and flip some of these state houses that make these laws, then we eliminate the possibility of it happening again, and then we simply make the right to vote automatic when you get that age, and it doesn't make any difference whether you voted in the last election or not. You still have that right to vote.
Right, and I think, and you know what, that actually, for some reason, that actually is not the first time that I've heard that, and that legislation has always ended up caught up in the filibuster for some reason, which the filibuster doesn't even, there's no need for the filibuster. The filibuster is just like it sounds, filibuster full of shit. So, and at the end of the day, you shouldn't have a right to go on a 24-hour just soliloquy about nothing to delay a vote on something. And I think that would what you just proposed, if they were to pass that, that would, people like my brother, I'm unashamed, you know, to say my brother, my baby brother is incarcerated in Florida for 60 years, 30 mandatory minimum. He's been in there now for almost 20 years for basically stealing a white lady car and going joyriding. I kid you not. And the fact that when he gets out, when he does get out, he still needs to have, and actually Florida has actually reinstated, you know, there was some legislation where they reinstated, felons and stuff like that. And more states need to do it, but they need to make it federal. They need to make it a federal law that once you serve your debt to society, that you should automatically get, like the gentleman is saying, you should automatically have your rights reinstated.
Your citizenship, your full citizenship.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
That's what it is. That's really what it is. Okay. Well, look, Mr. Scott, Carlos, thank you so much for joining us, family. I appreciate you.
No problem. I appreciate it, and thank you for having, you know, this great panel of people to you know, push the thoughts forward, because we gotta plant seeds into our youth mind to let them know that there's two sides of the coin, you know. And so, I appreciate you having the platform.
I'm gonna need your number because I have this body in my tub, and I need to know the best way to. Okay, never mind.
Get rid of it.
Oh, man. Look at, there you go.
All right, family. You be good.
You too, my brother. Good.
I'll catch you soon. Peace. Well, look, I want to talk about a number of things. You know, I got a little bit of time left. And, you know, we started talking about the lieutenant earlier. Carlos breached the DMX death. That hit me differently, and it didn't hit me differently so much because, again, I was a huge, huge fan. I was a fan, without a doubt. But I really put some thought into what I wanted to say about him today, and I got most of it out earlier when he said what he needed to say. And, you know, we talked about this when the coronavirus hit. Mental health is a huge part of our lives, and if we're not playing it right, it can be tipped in the wrong way, and it can wind up hurting us and the ones that we love. I'm not saying that D had mental issues. I'm saying that if that played part in his demise, then, you know, I hope everyone takes heed to that. You know, this young man was back to getting his life together. His music was about to drop. He had a new album that I think he finished it before he passed. So I'm looking forward to hearing that without a doubt. You know, that's going to sell like hotcake whenever it drops. You know, he's not a bad actor. He is not a bad actor at all. I was looking forward to seeing him on some other stuff, and you know, obviously,
no, he wasn't a bad actor, but he only played DMX. Just hear that,
right?
He was
right.
Not a bad, but he did not have to become Othello. He was asked to play a version of himself.
His life with his children was obviously on display on Iyana Fix My Life. I hope that for the sake of his children, he was able to mend some fences, if not all fences, before he died. But again, it is definitely a light loss because that cat was gifted, man. I mean, the way he did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that will forever live without a doubt. A number of his songs will forever live. His energy, it will greatly be missed without a doubt. And, you know, I have nothing but love for him. You know, unfortunately, we lost Prince Marky D a couple of weeks before. So, you know, the hip hop community is always taking an L here and an L there. And, you know, some of them we're more prepared for it than others, but some of our elders are elders at this point. You know, I mean, folks and, you know, Public Enemy and stuff like that there. And not that they're ancient, Rodney. I don't want you to feel a certain kind of way, but they are getting up there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you got those jokers in there, late 50s, early 60s.
That's right, Lee. Don't nobody want to look at not Ed Lover, but Dr. Dre's missing limbs.
That's right.
Thinking about.
Right. His NWA days and, you know, just how lively and vibrant. No, you're absolutely right, you know. Such is life. You know, life is for the living, and a part of this journey is our transition to our next phase, whatever that may look like. So, you know, history was made a couple times this month and in the last month. Boston appointed, not elected, but appointed its first black female and female mayor. St. Louis elected its first black female mayor. Shouts out to Misery and making a way out there in the Show Me State. But again, here we are in the year 2021. And we're talking still about first. When are we going to get off of that damn cycle? Like, seriously. Especially in cities or municipalities in which black folks are the majority. How are we still talking about first? I'm not there right now. My head hurt later on, and I don't need that in my life today. But, you know, it is what it is, y'all. I support folks out here trying to make a change and make a difference. I say that to say, Carlos said clearly that there was some lawsuits filed in Georgia. I know there's some being filed in Texas as well. I was trying to get some lawyers on from both Georgia and Texas. Wasn't able to work it out this week, you know, but we constantly keep people in the hopper, and we got some more stuff coming down the pipe, but I was looking to bring them in to discuss specifically what they see could be some outcomes as the next election cycle come along, which is right around the corner, because the midterm 2022 is right around the corner, and how these laws are going to play themselves out, if they're even going to, ever really trickle down to the people, because the lawsuits might knock them out the box. Who knows? But I hope, for hope's sake, that we get it together. Because as a nation, we still are very much separated and divided. And we don't need that, man. We just don't. we need to get our crap together. We really, really need. You got the attorney general, not the attorney general. The was it the AG? It wasn't the AG. The guy down in Alabama, he's facing sexual assault allegations, misconduct. I'm sorry, not assault, misconduct allegations. You know, Gates is still facing sexual misconduct allegations. What is up with sex and men of power? I just don't get it. You know, maybe it is a control issue. Maybe it is a, you know, a method or a way for them to project their power even further, or I don't know. I don't get it. I really don't. You know, I said before on the show that whole BDSM thing, that's just, it ain't for me. And it's not for me because I'm not the type of cat that, you know, I don't think I need to wield my power in that way. I don't think I live on a power trip like that, you know. So, but
you're not
the higher they are. No, that's true. But the higher they are, the harder they fall, you know. I had conversations years ago about gifted folks and how gifted folks tend to have sexual cravings that are outside of the norm. And, you think of R. Kelly, you think of Prince, you think of even Michael Jackson to an extent. You think of Elvis and everybody's, well, not everybody, but a lot of women were crooning over Drew.
You don't even just
say
sexuality.
Over the versus
all
battle.
All of it is out of the norm. Same breed, right. Ego, maniacism. Everything be out of the norm.
Right.
Like what they eat be stupid. They only eat quail eggs with peanut butter cream on them. You know what I'm saying? They run around in diapers. They eat, you know, they
right.
Throw money out of helicopters. And they, it's same and building up somebody like that based on their talent, it warps their mind. And yeah, you get all kind of weird behavior out of people who you place on a involuntary platform.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would like to us to talk about one day, the involuntary platform. When we put people up and they had no idea they was going up there.
Mm.
And when we look at them and say, "Ugh, you a pervert, but I love your music." What do they do? They didn't know you was going to love them so much that you put them on some kind of pedestal. They thought they were going to be able to be a closet perv. They had no idea that your fame was going to catapult them like that, make them important in that way. So now you want them to change everything about what they thought they were going to be just so you can keep listening to whatever music or watching whatever movie they make or collecting their art or what wearing their clothes. Or, you know, you like it so much that you created a separate society for them to work around in where they can have little children, where they can marry 5, 6, 7, 8 women.
I want to throw this out and have you all chew on this. But, I have to fade to black, but Joe Manchin represents everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party. When the Republicans are in office, they walk lockstep. Joe Manchin's consistent finger in the mixer, in the bowl, disturbing the pot, is exactly what the country does not need. Now, I'm not opposed to him fighting for his district. I'm not opposed to him getting some kickbacks again for his district. This is not the 70s and 80s when, you know, the kickbacks represented a military base and you just throw a military base up. I dig all that. The Dems need to get it together, hold it together, and walk straight. This is not the time to pity-pat, flip-flop, and not be on message as a unit. You have a very small window. Don't blow it. Don't fuck it up. get done what the country needs to get done, and infrastructure is what the country needs. This is not the time. And I got to fade to Black Rodney. You pick that one up because I know you all over that one.
Well, Joe Manchin is an example of the corruption in the Democratic Party and the party system, because the Democrats don't mind having Joe Manchin because they know that Joe Manchin can win his seat in, what is it, I think West Virginia? So because he can win that seat,
yes,
they tolerate his interference because it empowers them in other ways. I don't think we should be fooled by the Democrats right now that they are for the people. It just so happens that the Republicans have turned full white supremacists, and they have no policies at all other than grievances and division. So the Democrat can go and do some populist things because they know that it will endear them to the people. So let there be no illusions that the Democrats are for us. The Democrats are for themselves. That's why they tolerate a Joe Manchin.
Well, okay, so when we look at his current, what havoc is he currently wreaking? It's very closely tied to what Mr. Carlos Scott was talking about earlier with the filibuster behavior and the ability to bring government to a screeching halt when you do not agree with the policy that's being presented, right? And so now I think they consider Manchin to be the Republican-esque answer, you know, from the Democratic side, because I pretend to be a Democrat, we try to err on the side of the people, right? We want the people to have their say. We want government of the people, not necessarily just the people who have power, but the voice of the majority, the democracy. Now, when the other side is playing with, you know, true-to-earth attack dogs, the other side has the Roy Blunt. They have the real etched-in-stone, what like you say, white pathology agents who are ready to die in the legislative chair to keep the status quo. Now, we have some die-hard seat occupiers, but they're not ready to die on the sword for the people the way the Republicans are for their own principles and ideology. So who do we have that gives off that, you know, you ever heard of the concept of big dick energy, Mr. Rodney? When a man knows.
To the listening audience, Sister Rashi.
This is what I'm trying to explain to you. This is a pop, an idea of someone who already knows they hold the power, who already knows they have the network to support whatever decisions they create, and they have the favor of the general public because of something, and so they are allowed to behave a certain way. We don't have that. We don't have politicians on the Democratic, liberal, or progressive side, the Green Party either. Nobody other than the Republican Party has people who are ready to really show out, just show completely out on behalf of the people, though, not on behalf of the Democratic ideology, which is the people. They just won't. Republicans are ready to suppress votes. They're ready to storm the Capitol. Republicans are ready to starve out the poor of their community. Republicans are ready to unhouse those who can't pay their messed up mortgages. Republicans are ready to do the work of what it means to keep the quote-unquote, their version, that is, of the American dream alive. I don't believe, Brother Rodney, that the Democratic Party has those attack dogs. And so when you get a brother like Manchin who has attack dogs change instead of BD, attack dog-like energy, willing to do some of the necessary but unloved work of the political party, because there's some work that nobody wants to do. You know, the redlining with the gerrymandering work. People talk about it on the Republican side, but gerrymandering goes both ways. But who wants to do that work? There has to be people in both parties willing to redraw the lines of districts as they change with demographics. But who wants to do it without looking like a bad guy? Joe Manchin is our Democratic henchman, if you say. Henchmen. And if we don't have people like him, if we don't have people who are willing to do the unpopular work of the party, then what do we have? Because I can guarantee you the Republicans have it. The Republicans have people who are willing to pay the NRA, no matter how many babies catch bullets, they'll pay. The Republicans have money to sway large corporations to dump their tax money into the certain corporations and not others. Where is our strong man power when it comes to pushing democracy and the ideas of democracy around in the people's minds? We just let it happen if we're the anti-Republicans. But there's something called proper democracy, and I just don't think we have it enacted very much in our politicians. And I might be wrong. Rodney, can you fix me or correct me at all?
Well, I don't know about correcting, but I think that once we start breaking it down by party, that is already folly. Parties need the party care about the people. The parties care about the party and the power of the party. Joe Manchin could not exist if it wasn't for the fact that the party tolerates him, even encourages him, because he wins a seat in an area that they don't want to lose because they fear they may not get it back. So they're willing to sacrifice the good of the people to maintain the power that is derived from that one specific seat. So the Democrats are no heroes here. The heroes are going to be the people, and the people are going to be the ones that force the politicians to do the right thing. It's not going to be the politicians forcing politicians to do the right thing, because that is not their ethos. That's just not who they are. I remember when Reverend Wright said that, hey, you know, he's a man of the cloth. He speaks as a man of the cloth. Politicians speak as politicians speak, and you have to recognize that. Well, we have to recognize that politicians are doing what's best for politicians and what's best for themselves. There's absolutely no reason for infrastructure to be held up because it helps all people. It's something that both parties used to agree to until they needed something to divide themselves up. So the party politics, that's not it. Joe Manchin is there because of party politics, and the Democrats keep him there. And at any time that they need an attack dog, they can get an attack dog. And they've done it multiple times. The Democrats have done this. So neither are devoid of attack dogs. What the parties are devoid of is they are devoid of doing what's right for the people. That is what the parties are devoid of. President Biden is on the side that benefit the people. He smells it. It's like blood in the water. He's going for it. And from that, we will get some good things. Even Nixon gave good things. But it's not because of the people, it's because of the party.
So what, because we just had an election here in Kansas City, but it's all about, and here, you know, this recent one was about the reallocation of money. You know, yes to proposition this and no to proposition that. And so when it comes to stuff like that, we just can't get, you don't even have to worry about suppressing votes. You can't get people to really come out for proposition voting. non-primary election voting, they call it. And so what would you suggest? Because if we don't want to deal with people like Manchin, we don't want to deal with people like Kemp, Brian Kemp. We don't want to deal with these people anymore. What would you suggest us laypersons do to have a real positive effect on who we do get in those chairs, Mr. Rodney? Because it almost feels like we have to decide between a shit show and a circus, you know?
You got to break the paradigm, Sister Rashi. We've allowed them to set up kind of the playbook, and then we've fallen in line with their playbook. First of all, it is the citizen that is in charge. They're called representatives because they're supposed to represent the citizen or citizens of their district. That's how it's supposed to work. We call them leaders. Actually, we're the ones that's doing the leading. They're the ones that's supposed to be doing the bidding. I think a basic part of this, and at 2 o'clock today, we have a reading club where we're reading the Constitution. One of the reasons for reading the Constitution is because the average American has not read the Constitution. They only know what people tell them that's in the Constitution, and that's unfortunate. I'm a big fan of going back to basics. Let's learn how the country's supposed to work. Let's learn our roles in that mechanism, and then let's play our roles. Remember, slavery is still on the books in a good number of states, I think like 23, 24 states in this country. Both parties have controlled Congress, but neither one of those parties, when they were in power, have abolished slavery in this country. What the brother was talking about earlier, we wouldn't have some of these issues with felons getting their right to vote if they weren't treated as slaves, taking all of their rights. How do you get your rights taken if they're your rights God-given, not by man? So there's some structural things that has to be changed for us to be better and once citizens get more engaged. And I truly believe we were doing a gathering last night. One of the things I said is I think that this 2022 midterm election is going to defy history. And what I mean by that is usually the out party takes over Congress. I think because of these onerous new voting suppression tactics that are being passed in multiple states, that people like Stacey Abrams and others, it's going to keep the hype of voting up, and there'll probably be more people to come out to vote because the concept of voting didn't disappear for 2 years. You know, when the presidency comes out, everybody gets hyped. The midterms, not so much. Well, now, because of the voting suppression stuff, it's keeping people hyped. And because when black people, and I'm going to be specific, when black people go out to vote en masse, some things happen. One, in the modern era, usually Democrats win. Two, usually the country is made better. That's because black people went out to vote. So black people have to understand they are the ones who have the power of positive change in this country through the political realm by understanding the process and going out to vote for the policies and the candidates that best represent them. And if there is no candidate, then make sure that they pick their own candidate instead of who the party gives them on the next election.
I wanted to ask you about that, too, because my uncle, who you probably remember speaking to when he was behind bars,
mm-hmm.
He has done some phenomenal work since he has been released, Brother Rodney. But one of the things he's been able to do is unionize the homeless of Kansas City. His work with the homeless has gotten him on the short list of candidateship. But I wanted to know, what does that look like? Does that look like, how do I get Because it's almost a position that's about to be created to deal with, like, urban affairs or, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Because they deal with bringing industry to the city, the Urban League and whatnot. But what? But who deals with the actual state of the people, you know, really, other than, you know, the federal, you know, food stamp office or whatever? Even after you done gave them food stamps, somebody should be dealing with how the actual people are turning out. And he is. And so I think that that energy that he's putting into the people has gained him some low buzz about being, from, you know, ombudsman to on the city council or some position where they his the needs of the people that he serves are being added to the minutes that are being in these meetings. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to become a candidate. And I'm not 100% sure on what to tell my uncle to do in order to, one, remain in that kind of position where he can be a candidate, and then what he should be proactively doing to help someone who wanted to nominate him for anything of importance, you know?
Well, I think that we have to be careful in what positions we take, because sometimes there's baggage with those positions that are there to hinder us from doing the good work that we would do in a Just John and Jane Q Public. So, for example, when I was running for Congress, was talking about running for Congress, some Democratic insiders came to me, and they didn't like the position I was running from, so they were trying to get me to run for another position. And then they said, don't worry about it. All you got to do is just come in, sit down and shut up, and we'll tell you what to do and say. Well, I didn't want them, you know, the people weren't going to vote for me for someone else outside of them to tell me what to do and say for them. So sometimes a position can hinder your progress for the people. So if he's seriously considering taking whatever position, the first thing is researching the position and what would he actually be able to do if he got in that position. So that's hugely important, because he may find his hands are tied because of various policies and, you know, bureaucracies and the systems, the mechanisms that's in place. The reason why I say that is, Sister Rashi, there is no reason for people to be homeless in America. There's no reason. There's no reason for people to be hungry in America. There's no reason. I mean, other than capitalism, which is the late Sam Smith says, in order to have capitalism, you got to have poor people. Well, I reject the notion of that we have to have any one thing. Maybe it's time to get rid of the labels when it comes to stuff like that, and just go to what works. Well, one of the things that we know doesn't work is poverty. It doesn't work in multiple areas, whether we're talking health, education, you name it, right? Well, that's poverty is engineered into the system, just as homelessness and hunger is engineered in the system. And what I'm hoping that we can either produce or someone will come along and state it, just as I said, is that as Americans, we should be embarrassed that we have 20% of all children and 25% of black children being hungry in this country and not knowing where their next meal will come from. That was pre-pandemic. About 40% of our population is on some type of subsistence program. Those things should be deemed unacceptable, almost like persona non grata. In other words, we're not tolerating homelessness in this country. We're not tolerating hunger in this country. And we're going to eradicate poor because it is within our power to do so once we have the will to do it. So for your uncle, kudos to the work that he's done, but research the office and make sure
that if he was to get in whichever office it is, that he will have the ability to do the work
right.
that he feels needs to be done.
I believe what's happened, Brother Rodney, is there comes a point in John and Jane Q. Public's work where the need outdoes the actual resources. And the person who's providing this relief, they just get frustrated with the inability to do the work because they don't have access to the funds. The only way to really access it is to either join someone who's doing the funding, you know, who's getting federally or state funding, or to, you know, become a state or federal agent who works in funding and facilitating those types of. Other than that, you're waiting on us. You're waiting on people to care enough about an issue that they put their, not just their money, but their hearts, minds, and times into making a difference. And as long as it's an incentive, it's a social incentive not to be homeless. The homeless, and I say we still because I've only been housed less than a year. I went a significant, more than a year's time homeless with my son and I did. We're used as a cautionary tale in society. Don't end up like so-and-so. As long as we can be used in that way, you'll never see any significant change. It's the power of the us over them, you know, and as long as we can create just an unfortunate them, not a them that deserve it. Nobody homeless deserves it, but they are the them. And so don't be them. Don't go crazy and become a them. Don't get sick with medical and be unable to support your lifestyle because of medical needs and become a them. Don't do this and become a them. Don't get arrested. Don't become a serial criminal and be unreliable when it comes to leases and things like that. Don't do that, and then we'll accept you in society until we take that stigma of being hungry. How could you be hungry? That means you don't know anybody who cares enough to feed you. That means you're not smart enough to go where the free food is. How could you be hungry, they ask.
We have about 8 minutes left in the show. But again, these are all false narratives because, you know, we're not a third world country by definition. We have our GDP, you know, businesses, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, we have to look at it from a holistic point of view. Yes, there is mental illness, but mental illness has gotten to the point where it is today because of policies of yesterday. Remember Ronald Reagan and what he did to the mental health care structure throughout this country? No administration has rebuilt our mental health care infrastructure. Now, President Obama, through the ACA, did put some stones in place. And President Biden is doing some things in his infrastructure program, which really is more about human infrastructure than physical infrastructure. So those are all good things. But until we eliminate the acceptability of people not getting proper medical care, which includes mental health care, until we eliminate those things from society, we have them because society allows them to be there. Until we eliminate homelessness, and there is just very few places that cannot provide housing for their citizens. In Las Vegas, not only do we set up things to make people lose their jobs and to become homeless, you know, we got gambling here, right? But then we criminalize them for being homeless. So the structure is set up to drain your money, gambling. Your money is drained, you're on the streets, homeless. And then we're going to pass a law to make it a criminal offense to be homeless. And so then we send you to a prison
maybe it's a private prison that then hires your labor out, very similarly to convict leasing of the day, because remember, by definition, you're a slave if you're incarcerated, right? And then when you do work, we only pay you 11 cents an hour or maybe a dollar a day if you wind up being a firefighter. So those are things that's built into the system. And what I'm saying is, hey, there's some things that we just need to eliminate, and we need to state it. And one of those things that we need to state right now is that America is going to eliminate hunger in this country, and America is going to eliminate homelessness. It's going to eliminate people's lack of access and ability to get all of the health care that they need. We can do it. Other countries have done it. Surely if other countries have done it that don't have the resources that we have, we can do it. It's a matter of will.
Yeah. We spent so many years I pulled myself up by my bootstraps. I have built an industry. This is a very much I society. And here recently, you're right, legislation, politicians have talked to us about the we. It has to be we, you know, it cannot work with I. And so many people are like, yeah, I want to make sure I profit from whatever we are doing. Whatever we are doing can't have me living bad. And then others who are already living bad are like, what we? Y'all been living off of the otherness this whole time. What we? And so in order to get any of this new infrastructure really to behave the way we want it to, we have to start a new idea of we have to actually attempt the United States of America. You understand? Like, this sounds incredibly dumb to say, but we're going to have some type of unification campaign. That's what it takes to get people to even think about the collective we. You're not healthy. You're not healthy if your neighbor next to you is dying. If your neighbor is dying of cancer and they don't even know where they can get treatment, then you're not healthy, no matter how good or fit you are. So the collective healthy we, the collective intelligence. We are only as smart as our dumbest American, not our brightest American. We will only progress as fast as our dumbest, most idiotic American. We will only be as healthy as our least healthiest citizen. We will only be as kind as, you know, as we can be collectively to each other. No one person's act to another person is going to be good enough, Rodney, until we take it on as collectively. And I look forward, Rodney, to your next collective work. You already started with your Black agenda. You've already started with your trying to be a politician in the first place. So thank you, Rodney, for your work, and I look forward to what's next. Mine, of course, is going to be in the realm of education, but I look forward even to myself turning some new educational corners. So until next week, Brother Rodney, I'm so glad I get to hear your voice once a week. It's so anchoring, because it's not to age you or make you feel like an old man beyond your years. You're not Father Time, but your voice is comforting. Your perspective is open, and I appreciate learning from you every week.
Well, thank you for the kind and generous words, Sister Rashi. I appreciate Brother Lee for having the platform. Big shout out to his guest this morning, who is doing big time work and making things happen and changing people's lives. So another great guest, Lee. Well, Sister Rashi, I guess we're 1 minute on the clock. Thanks to all the listeners. And Sister Rashi, close us out.
When you take a notion to like or dislike or want to add any commentary to what it is you hear here on this show, first you pick up your phone, or if you don't already have it on you, and you go to the dial pad, you dial 818-691-7348. That's 818-691-7348. 1-800-696-9173-48 between the hours of 10 and noon in Central Time. And what time there in Vegas, Mr. Rodney?
8 and 10.
All right. You know what to do. You got the digits. Be feel free to call. Bye-bye.
Peace.